This is the Elevate Podcast, where we have conversations to elevate your health, relationships, and soul. I'm Amanda Nogar. I'm a yoga and Ayurveda practitioner, and each week I'm joined by my co-host, holistic health coach, Sarah Hopkins. So let's dive in to this week's episode. Hello, hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Elevate Podcast. It's Amanda here. And today we are going to unpack the topic of perimenopause. And so just to get super clear, perimenopause is the period of time in a woman's life where our hormones begin to plummet. No, they gradually decline and headed in the direction of menopause. And so this periphase can last anywhere from like 2 to 15 years, they say. And when I was reading up in the Ayurvedic texts about what this time is all about, they say explicitly that when women notice darkening of the hair on the upper lip, it's 6 years until her periods will dry up. So I found that kind of interesting.
I'm pretty sure I noticed darkening of hair on my upper lip many, many years ago. But okay.
Yeah, I was thinking, I'm sure people are going to say, yeah, I had that in my 20s. So maybe,
yeah,
you know, we can toss that out. But the definition of menopause is when we have a full 12-month cycle without any periods at all. And so typically in that wind-down phase, we can experience periods becoming less regular, so kind of erratic in length, maybe becoming longer, shorter, heavier, lighter, along with a whole host of other signs and symptoms that we'll flesh out later in the episode today. But what do you think, Sarah? Is there anything more to say to get clear on what this perimenopause stage is all about?
Yeah, well, I guess I wanted to say that, you know, I think, well, the reason that we wanted to talk about perimenopause, I mean, it's very pertinent for me. I'm literally embodying perimenopause right now, and I definitely, you know, want to share a little bit about what that is like for me. And I can also share from clinical experience in working with many, many women that are experiencing it. But menopause, you know, like you said, Amanda, menopause is basically after you have had a full 12 months of no periods, and usually that happens between the ages of 50 and 55. But perimenopause happens usually between the ages of 35 and 55, and like you said, it usually goes between 2 years and a decade roughly. That seems to be what the general consensus is around that. But when we think about menopause, we think about hot flushes and low libido and maybe vaginal dryness and insomnia and hormonal fluctuations. And like you said, we'll flesh these out later. But actually, all of that is perimenopausal. So perimenopause, which happens, you know, for a lot of us in our 30s or starts to or can start to, is actually all of the stuff that we have, you know, heard our mothers complain about, and there's lots of sort of cultural shame and weirdness and fear around. So, you know, It's really, really relevant for us to talk about not menopause, but perimenopause, because some of us listening right now are experiencing it, and all of us are going to pretty much sooner than later, really, because most of us, you know, I know most of the people listening are women and they're in their 30s. So, You know, I guess it might at first glance, if you're looking at this episode, feel like, oh, that's not really relevant to me, but it really is. It's really relevant for all of us. And I think, you know, we can talk about why later on, you know, what we do now if we're not perimenopausal will affect that. But yeah, perimenopause is that time between, you know, your most fertile years and when you stop menstruating. And that can be a really long time.
And I guess another reason why we wanted to cover this topic is because it's the periphase that we can really support ourselves with different practices, and the information that we're going to share today can be, yeah, really helpful in that phase. Menopause itself is kind of the end point, and there's nothing really to be done then. But it's in that peri phase where we can, yeah, implement a whole host of awesome practices to navigate that transition and make it as smooth as possible, because ultimately it's our overall health and our health even leading up to that peri phase that's going to determine how intense the symptoms of that perimenopausal stage is.
Definitely. And I just want to quickly share that, I have noticed some changes in my cycle. And so I've always worked with menopausal women, and I guess over the last few years I've been more aware of perimenopause, which is a relatively new sort of hormonal catchphrase for, there used to be sort of just menopausal and premenopausal, and now they've, in probably the last 10 years or so, created this perimenopausal, which is so helpful because it's really one of the most significant transitionary hormonal periods of our lives. Mm-hmm. But yes, I have, become more aware of it, and now I am starting to notice it happening to me. And, we can talk more about this, but I notice, and I don't know if it's because, I suppose I didn't have a period for basically 10 years. Like maybe I had a few periods in that time, but very few and far between, and very, very long periods of years where I didn't menstruate. And I love my period so much, which makes me really rare and unusual, because most women are just dying, a lot of them are just like really dying to not have their period, but I don't know, maybe they're not. But anyway, I feel like I have this I love my period. I love my 28-day cycle. And to see the signs, and I think this is actually also quite a common experience for different reasons for other women, but to see signs that that is changing, which for me is like a shortening of cycles, which is sort of more of a beginning stage of perimenopause, and I can talk through some of the early and later stages if you want, but to see that change in my cycle, I'm sad. I don't want my cycle to go away, and I think it's worse for me because I didn't have it, and then I had it, for roughly 10 years I've had really great cycles, but there's some mourning that needs to occur when gradually I'm going to have to let go of that cyclical nature. And I'm sure we'll talk about this more, but yeah, I'm feeling really sad. I don't want it to go away. So yeah, I think there's a lot of,
There's many layers, and there's so much talk about all the physical symptoms of perimenopause, but I think just as important for us to recognize and honor are the mental shifts and changes that happen, and emotional and just like
and spiritual.
Like we've spoken at length about all of the different phases around pregnancy and birth and that transition, that rite of passage that is, going from maiden to mother. And with this, it's also another rite of passage. And so what's really important is to really make peace with the past, to make peace with your,
I'm so 10 sad. Years.
And to create, some acceptance around what is happening and what's present and what is in the future and what's coming. Yeah. That is ultimately, I really think, our mental perspective. That is what can make things challenging or easeful. If we are in opposition and really struggling against what's happening in the present moment, that's what makes it the hardest, that lack of acceptance or resistance to what is. But when you can, I know it's easier said than done, and it really is a practice, which is why, I know I'm a broken record, but why yoga and meditation are so key, because they help us, it's like training wheels for all of these bigger life moments that we need to make peace with and to accept and surrender to, it's a practice. And I'm not saying it's, you know, a piece of cake.
Easy. Yeah.
But it's important.
Yeah, for sure. So let's come back to some of the more sort of health related things first. And then
do you want to give us a little rundown on what is happening physically in the body?
Yes, it's so sad, but no. Okay. So
basically, we have to change the rhetoric around it. I mean, it's okay to be sad and honor the grief. Just like, yes, you know, the death of the maiden, it's necessary, but there's so much beauty on the other side.
Yeah. So basically at a physical level, so during our, you know, and actually this is an interesting point. So right before we start to become or go into puberty is like a really big transition time in our bodies when like there's a lot going on. And this is sort of like that. And this is sort of like that on steroids. This is your body is changing during this time from being fertile to being, you know, having different physiological functions, right? Where it doesn't have to prepare for reproduction. And so, you know, during our fertile years, which onset of puberty can be, you know, as early as 10 and in a lot of girls sort of 12 to 14. So, although that's getting earlier and earlier, and there's lots of reasons for that. So during our fertile years, every cycle, the body is preparing for pregnancy. So the first half of the cycle is all about thickening the lining and preparing to release a follicle, an egg. And then the second half of the lining is, are we pregnant? Or second half of the cycle, I should say, are we pregnant or not? Okay, shed. Yeah, that's basically it. And the two predominant hormones associated with that, there's obviously more, but are estrogen, first half of the cycle, progesterone, second half of the cycle. Now, obviously, once we go into menopause, that actually means that we are not ovulating at all anymore. So it's a sort of slowing down of those hormones. It's a slowing down, particularly in perimenopause, it's a slowing down in the releasing of eggs. It's a, well, actually, initially it's a quickening. It's a quickening of the releasing. It's almost like the body is aware of the impact of time. And so there's sort of a ramping up, and that's when women, you know, can get some of the, you know, symptoms that we'll talk about. And then, you know, over time in the later stages of perimenopause, there's a real slowing down in that importance of and production of that ovulatory cycle. So that's really what's happening.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
Is it that we're out of eggs? Like, do we use up all of the eggs?
That's a really good question. I think
so. Or do we still have eggs in the bank, they just don't get released?
I don't even know the answer to that question.
That's okay. We can do it.
I don't quote me on that. I should know that because I work with so many women that are maybe in perimenopause and they're sort of told that they're not fertile at that point. I think it's probably both. I think some women legitimately run out of eggs, and then other women have the decline in those hormones. So all of those, especially
the eggs don't reach maturation.
Exactly, like luteinizing hormone and follicle stimulating hormone, and those ones that are also really important in that whole hormonal feedback loop, they start to slow down, and then those eggs, those follicles become redundant. Does that make sense? So I think it's both, but let's check.
Let's do a fact check.
Yeah, let's do a fact check.
No, I'm just curious. That's kind of an aside.
Yeah. And so, you know, you've probably, everybody's heard that you, in the sort of especially in the later parts of perimenopause, everyone talks about low levels of estrogen and, you know, what that means and, you know, like declining libidos and, you know, vaginal dryness and giving less fucks and all of that stuff, which
and
relates.
What is it, being a Karen or something?
Oh, yeah, being a Karen, complaining about everything. But I think that, well, I think that there's some problems with it being as simple as low estrogen. I don't necessarily think
it's
that
more
that,
complex than that.
It is. And the thing is that most of us are actually estrogen dominant. And the reason for that is that we have so many estrogens in our environment now. And yeah, there's estrogens in our food, like, you know, vegetable oils are estrogenic, like all the industrial seed oils are, once they're sort of converted in the body, once they're metabolized, they're super estrogenic. We've got like xenoestrogens and you know, estrogenic endocrine disrupting chemicals in every single personal care product, in carpets, in like offices off-gassing, in furniture, in just every corner of our modernized world. You know, we're being exposed to like artificial estrogens, like in plastics, in, you know, food containers, in, like I said, basically it's very hard to avoid it. So I think that estrogen dominance is actually causing hormonal imbalances and causing low progesterone, that's also causing perimenopause symptoms of all of these things that we might blame on low estrogen, actually probably low progesterone. And let me just say one more thing, and maybe then either you can ask me some questions or we can talk about management strategies. But I suppose perimenopause has stages. So at the beginning, sort of the early signs can be shorter periods. So that sort of looks different, like looks not like what you sort of hear, that your periods get longer and longer and stuff. At the beginning, you're getting shorter periods. You can be getting really heavy bleeds. You can be getting, you know, some weight gain, some disruptions, particularly to your sleep. So problems falling asleep, lots of mind racing, and problems staying asleep, maybe being woken up and just having those racing thoughts. So those sorts of things, that anger, that sort of PMS-y anger, that they're sort of early, yet worsening PMS symptoms, they're the early phases of perimenopause. And then your later phases of perimenopause are that lengthening of cycles, skipping periods, hot flushes, all of those more standard symptoms that maybe we identify with our mother's experience of menopause. They're the later stages, the real vaginal dryness stuff. That's all that later you're really coming towards, you know, completing that full year of no period. And really, once you, for most women, once that year, that no, that full year of no period, a lot of this stuff goes away. That's why, you know, menopause is like, really, it's like one day in the whole scheme of things. The whole story
it's
is
like birth.
Yeah, exactly. It's like perimenopause is 10 years. Menopause is a day, and then it's postmenopause, and most women, that can actually be a really amazing time, and they do start to feel a lot better. And we'll talk about this, but if they can really start to embody and embrace all of the things that come with that freedom that comes from, you know, not being as cyclical and sort of tied into that cycle, then there's so much to be gained from that. So I suppose, just to stay on health for one more minute, you know, if you are still in your fertile years and you have lots of hormonal symptoms right now, like all the PMS stuff, like the period stuff, which we spoke about in our episode on periods. You can go back and listen to that. Then, you know, there's an opportunity for you to look at your well-being and your health now, because if you don't, you're, you know, 2, 5, 7, 10 years of perimenopause is going to be more challenging and filled with all of those things that, you know, we've sort of culturally created as terrible things to happen during perimenopause.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, establishing that relationship with our menstrual cycle is so important when it comes to, and it's like the payoff is really at these rite of passage times in our life, like birth. You know, if we've done the work in a way of, yeah, being in relationship with our cycle, keeping track, you know, and doing all of the things, like you said, that we talked about in detail in our episode on periods, then pregnancy and birth can be a much more smooth transition. Same
and
goes
perimenopause.
For,
yeah,
exactly. Same goes for this perimenopause and menopause. So there really is so many benefits for, yeah, tracking our cycle, keeping in relationship with our cycle.
Exactly.
Just to, I guess, break it down through the Ayurvedic lens just a tiny bit, basically this phase, peri, is dominated by vata. It's when we have increasing vata in our system, right? And so what, as a general theme, and there's, you know, different things that we can talk about for each different symptom, but generally speaking, to balance vata, we want to increase kapha. So again, we can go into that more later if need be. But what we also can consider is our own personal dosha. So again, like being in relationship with our own doshic constitution is really, really helpful when it comes to these transition times, because we kind of know what our baseline is. We know what our balance point is on an individual basis. And so depending on what your individual dosha is, whether you're vata, pitta or kapha, that's going to determine what signs and symptoms are more intense or prominent for you in that perimenopause phase. So just like as an example, if you're dominant in vata, then you're going to have more of the dry skin, dry hair, vaginal dryness, the constipation and disruption with digestion, insomnia, like you said, anxiety, worry, all of those things that we typically associate with vata, right? Like decreased ability to concentrate, erratic thoughts, erratic moods. However, if you are pitta dominant, then the hot flashes and the irritability and the heavy bleeding, or like rashes on the skin and high blood pressure, those are going to be the symptoms that really come to the fore in this periphase. Whereas if you are kapha dominant as your personal dosha, and again, we're looking to increase kapha overall in this phase, but if you're kapha dominant on an individual basis, then it's something to kind of keep in check, something to keep balanced. So the symptoms that are going to probably flare up the most are
weight gain.
Yep. Weight gain or like depression. Fluid retention. Mm-hmm. Depression, sadness, kind of like heaviness.
Lethargy.
Heavy. Yeah, exactly. And even like high cholesterol.
Maybe blood sugar stuff as well, potentially.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So hopefully that makes sense a little bit. But yeah, overall, this phase is connected to increasing vata. So again, to balance that, we want to ground and we want to go kapha, more kapha.
And if anyone wants, maybe we can put in the show notes, Mandy, some like general information about the doshas, like we always do if we're, you know, going to be sort of expanding on them, so that people can just work out what their dosha is if they want to know. But I think that ties in perfectly to another point that I want to make about sort of physical health. And that is, and this pertains to anything hormonal. And I feel like we've always you know, spoken about this ad nauseum, but it always bears speaking about, that the most important thing to manage during perimenopause and really for hormones is stress. And so obviously that ties in perfectly with this phase being Vata, because despite what people think, even postmenopausally, we still create hormones, but we will not create those hormones if we are producing too many of those stress hormones like cortisol. So basically, and especially, like I said, we need to have the estrogen to progesterone balance really finely tuned. And I think we need way more progesterone to estrogen. And actually, we've got it the other way around because of our lifestyle. And the thing that depletes progesterone more than anything else is stress. If your body is producing too much cortisol, which is, do you have a job? Do you have children? Are you studying? Do you have Wi-Fi?
Are you doing anything?
In your house? Do you live in a Western culture? Then you're probably producing too much cortisol. Your adrenals are working way more than they need to. Well, then you're probably, it's stealing it. It's called the pregnenolone steal. And it will actually preference the production of that over the production of progesterone and everything. So even if you're just still in your fertile years, that will create sort of all of those fun PMS symptoms and create that havoc, which is a red flag and a warning sign for perimenopause. So again, you know, just to reiterate from a health perspective, what you've said from an Ayurvedic perspective, it is absolutely all about managing that Vata and managing that stress.
And, you know, we have all those external stresses, and kind of to link to what I was saying a little bit earlier, nothing increases stress in the body like holding anger or resentment or irritations from the past. So this is why it's so key that we make peace with our past and make peace with everything that has gone down in that cycle from either getting our first period or, you know, maybe the cycle is from having our last baby through till now, that being a cycle. It's imperative that we make peace with all of that. And everything is going to come to the surface. This is an opportunity through this transition time, like any transformation, like any transition, this is an opportunity for us to heal and to make peace with whatever needs to be seen, heard, understood within ourselves. So yes, we've got all the external stresses, but it's also an inside job.
Absolutely. And that just also prompted me, and I feel like I keep bringing it back to health, but this is just really relevant to what you just said. If you've had children, so every child depletes you a little bit, right? And we've spoken about this at length during sort of talking about pregnancy and postpartum and all of those things. And that postpartum period, if we haven't done what we need to do to really rehabilitate our nutrient stores and nurture, even, you know, at a metaphysical level as well as a pure physical level, then again, once we fall into that sensitive Vata, like you said, phase of perimenopause, all of that shows up. So just
totally everything's going to bubble up to the surface that wants to be understood and, you know, be done with.
That's right. Yes. And I guess, you know, at the end of the day, the body, like, this is literally just thinking of this for the first time. Like, these periods are just the body and the mind and the soul's opportunity to give you the messenger, give you the little book with the piece of paper, you know, with all of the different stuff that you need to heal before you transition to the next stage. So like you said, there's physical, or like I said, there's physical stuff that needs to be healed so that you can, you know, be as healthy as you can in your sort of second half of your life. And there's emotional and spiritual things that also need to be healed. And they're all showing up in this transition period to give you an opportunity to do that.
Totally.
I heard a lady say that the first 40 years of our life are all about legitimacy, and the second 40 years of our life, because obviously the average life expectancy is around 80 something, the second 40 years of our life is all about legacy.
Ooh.
Yeah. So that's, it's like, cool. What can we do to make sure that we can start to embody in every way our legacy in those later years?
Love it.
So I feel like we've sort of like swung around from health and soul. Do we need to talk about relationships a little bit before we talk about practices?
Well, there's one major relationship which you kind of just touched on there, and that is our relationship to time. And I just want to explain a little bit, and I'm sure I have talked about this before. I always talk about it in workshops and stuff, but maybe not on the podcast. But in Ayurveda, so you were saying we've got these two 40-year cycles, but in the Vedic kind of lens, we have these four major seasons of life, and they are depending on our life expectancy, I guess, three or four. And they're marked by our astrology. So you probably heard of our Saturn returns. And so that first Saturn returns happens around, you know, the 28-year mark, 27, 28, 30-year mark of our life. And then the second Saturn returns is around 50, 52-ish. And then the third again at, I guess it would be 90-ish. And then, you know, we could continue on and keep living. So the first phase as we enter as children, sorry, you can probably hear my puppy in the background, but he's okay, is dominated by kapha, right? So as I was saying earlier, this periphase is dominated by vata. But to kind of go back a little bit, kapha rules us for the first phase of our life from when we're born through to, you know, our first Saturn returns, basically. And that's our phase of grounding, getting in the body, establishing ourselves in the world. And then we go into the pitta phase of life, which is really, we could also say, like, that's the time in our life when we're achieving and we're working and we're really doing stuff in the world. And then we go into the vata time. And so this is marked by our accumulation of wisdom, our ability for clairvoyance and insight. And that vata energy, it also compels us to share. So vata is all about communication. And so to share that wisdom with our loved ones and our community, that's kind of our job as we go into this vata phase of life. And so our role in our community and our family and our relationships changes. I'm sure, you know, our relationship with our intimate partner changes through this periphase, with our kids, with our work, with the people that we work with, and, you know, with our parents as well. It's like it changes, yeah, our role in the world.
Totally. Yeah. And I think, you know, one thing I've been thinking about is that, you know, if I think about my mother's experience, like, I mean, again, I never really was aware of perimenopause. I was only ever aware of menopause. And my mum didn't have a particularly sort of traumatic experience with menopause. So hopefully, well, I'm sure mine won't be too bad either. And obviously, we're going to share practices. Hello, it's Sarah here, and I'm just briefly interrupting this episode to tell you a little bit more about what I offer. So I've worked with literally hundreds and hundreds of women, helping them transform their health, hormones, fertility, and more. And I absolutely love working one-on-one with women because we're all uniquely different.
So if you're interested in learning more about coaching with me, or if you're ready to book an initial consultation, you'll find the link in the show notes. I look forward to hearing from you.
The experience for our mothers is going to be different to us because a lot of our mothers were having kids younger. So when they Right. were getting into their sort of late 30s and early 40s, their kids were older, right? And you know, maybe certainly my mum's generation, and I think that's, and definitely the generation before her, and we were more in line with, you know, our true fertility cycles, like having children younger. And then, you know, in our late 30s and early 40s, our children were getting older. And that was, you know, in line with our own sort of declining fertility. And then us moving, having the freedom because our children were older and more self-sufficient and eventually leaving the home. And then that gave us the open space and the capacity to move into, like you said, that phase where we're more of the wise throne, where we are that Vata phase again, where we do have that capacity to share, right? Mm-hmm. But now, like, I know so many people, and I myself only had my son at 39, so basically had my son potentially, you know, in the middle of perimenopause. And, you know, my process of going through menopause is potentially going to coincide with me still being, you know, in that in full mother mode. Sort of, yeah. And so it's, I just think that that's an interesting
Yeah, so there's something challenge. Really cool that I want to bring up here. So like you were saying, our, you know, the generations before us and, you know, going even further back, our ancestors worked with the archetype of the triple goddess. And you might have seen this symbol. It's like the two kind of crescent moons and then the woman in the middle. Maybe I'll put it in the show notes or on Instagram or something. But that was represented across all ancient cultures, everywhere from, you know, Greece to India. And in simple terms, we can call her like the maiden, the mother, and then, like you said, the crone. And this is in the days where women were having, you know, their babies at 15. They were becoming grandmothers at 45, maybe. And then, you know, dying not too long after, you know, maybe dying at like 60, let's say.
Or, you even know, earlier, but yeah.
Yeah, that timeline could be, you know, tweaked depending on how far back we go. But obviously we've evolved and now we live much, much longer and we're going to continue to live longer. What we've grown into is a whole new chapter of life. We've actually gained a whole new chapter. And so we've kind of moved, we've evolved out of the triple goddess, and now we can use this framework of the four seasons. And there's like another name that people are using now, and it's the Maga. So there's the maiden, the mother, the Maga, and then the crone. And the name, the Maga, is the feminine version of the magician. So in this case, the Maga woman is totally ripe and ready in that phase of her life to share her magic and her gifts and all of the wisdom that she's accumulated through her life thus far with the world. And so in our day and age, typically like you're still working, you're still in mother mode, you're still totally active in the community, and maybe, you know, more than ever, more active than ever. You're not in this phase yet of being the crone, like sitting quietly reflecting. That's not at all what's happening at this Maga phase of life, or in this perimenopause phase of life. There's still loads of energy, and even, you know, in that postmenopausal phase, potentially even more energy and time to share, to be in that full, yeah, full magic and to give everything to her family and friends and community and the world, you know. So it's actually really exciting if we can reframe it. We've gained like this whole other cycle of life, and it's potentially, you know, the most transformational. It's like really landing in ourselves, like you said, like the feeling of like giving no fucks anymore about, you're not concerned about even legitimacy. That's you know, we're not worried about proving ourselves anymore. And if in the previous rite of passage, as we go into motherhood, we're birthing our children, in this rite of passage, we're birthing ourselves. We're really rebirthing and landing in ourself fully and more whole and complete than ever before.
Hey, it's Amanda, and I'm here to fill you in on where to go to get started on living your best life yet. Paths to You is my online membership where I weave together the teachings of yoga and Ayurveda to guide you back to your true nature, your best self. It's the most affordable way to receive all of my online workshops. There's everything from detoxing and doshas, sleep and sex, women's cycles, and the corresponding yoga practices that go alongside the information shared so that you can truly embody your unique expression of health and vibrancy. There's also a really special 40-day path included that walks you through the inner work of living with more passion, power, and purpose. So to get started with your 7-day free trial, head to the Paths to You website linked in the show notes. And now back to the episode.
I love that. Yeah. I'm curious what I've always heard crone, mother, maiden, crone. So it is crone a retreat inward? Is because I have, you know, heard that a lot of, you know, holistic and spiritual practitioners talk about that postmenopausal period can be a real opportunity for creativity, and a new creative pursuits, you know, because of, you know, if we take it back to the hormonal perspective, the decline in estrogen, which is may or may not be true, but just that that phase of being nurturer for all starts to end, right? And I sort of associated that with crone, but is crone slightly different to that? Is crone sort of a detachment from the group? Is it like the wise detached?
Not necessarily from the group, but like I guess in traditional cultures and in many cultures still around the world, the elder members of the family are still very much within the family. Like, I'm in Bali, and it would be totally insane to even think of, like, if I suggested that the oldest people in the family get shipped off and put into a home by themselves, removed, that would be totally insane. Like, I can't even imagine what people would think about that idea. But so the crone phase is really, it's, I guess, if there is like a rite of passage, it's, I guess, the stop of work. And that vata phase continues. So we go into this vata phase with a perimenopause, and then it just continues for the rest of our life, increasing vata forevermore, pretty much. So it's really, really important that we make our practice, you know, circled around staying really juicy. But that crone phase is, I guess, typically about being, more quiet, reflective, philosophical, and maybe conserving energy to just be kind of, to be more still, to be taken care of in the home, still very much a part of the family and the community, but not necessarily out there like preaching from the rooftops, you know? Like,
okay. So that's why the marga, makes sense.
Real active phase. When we have, still lots of energy and creativity and wantingness to be in the world, And potentially, you know, if our kids are growing up and they're, you know, also adults, then we have that more free time and time to, yeah, pursue other creative ventures.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And I think, you know, before we pivot into some practices, I think that it can be, if the kids are a bit older, it can be a time, another sort of upheaval for women to wonder or find their worth. If a lot of their worth, self-worth and just general worth has been tied into the caring role that they take for particularly their children, and as their children do become more self-sufficient, it does leave all this space. And if there hasn't been, again, if we come back to one of our first episodes on passion, you know, if we haven't paid attention to things that light us up and things that fill our cup, then, you know, there can be some wide open space there that might be, you know, challenging for some people initially to navigate. Yeah, I think
that is a big challenge, especially, I don't know, I see it kind of changing a little bit with, like, our generation going forward, but definitely for generations past where everything was put into the kids and the family. And I guess, like, at the extreme end of the spectrum, it's like that martyr mother archetype.
Totally.
But then, yeah, that leaves this gaping hole in our sense of identity when kids are, you know, grown up and out of the house, which is, of course, like what we, you know, we, I guess some people want for their family. But, yeah, that's why it's really important that we have, if not, you know, in those mothering years, perhaps it's not, you know, manifesting as going out and changing the world and having this grand purpose, but to have at the very least a personal practice, a relationship with ourself on, you know, a daily basis or weekly basis or whatever it might be, something that we do, whether it's yoga, meditation, or, you know, our art or singing or whatever it might be, something that we do just for ourselves that allows us to still have that thread of connection to our own identity and our own self-worth that's not fully dependent on all the external roles of being a mother and a wife and all those things.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I think you say that that is less so because we, you know, maybe traditionally now there isn't many stay-at-home mums, but I actually think that, you know, for most, I think that that's still really pertinent because I think that for most, like even millennials and certainly Gen Xers, like, okay, you know, there's a lot of time taken up outside of, you know, raising and caring for children with just work. Mm-hmm. So, you know, like if that's it and that's not, you know, something that is fulfilling, which for most people it isn't, that wide open space and that hole is still there.
Yeah.
I think it's really pertinent still. I just think the flavour has changed ever so slightly.
It's manifesting differently. Yeah, yeah, you're right. Especially if work is just a kind of, yeah, a distraction or like a means just, to an end, and it's not means purpose to an driven. End.
Yeah, and most people's work isn't purpose driven, right? So,
well, it will be in the future.
Yeah, definitely.
Let's get into some actual specifics about what the hell we can do to manage. I thought it might be cool if we touch on a few specifics and share some recommendations.
Yeah, definitely.
So, do you want me to kick off?
Yeah, go for it.
Okay, so from the Ayurvedic yogic lens, when we're dealing with hot flashes, so that, again, if our personal dosha is pitta, we're going to be experiencing that to the max. And I want to recommend two specific breathing techniques, and I'll put some links below so that you can see if this is relevant for you to practice. And if you're, you know, a yogi, then you'll probably know these anyway. So Nadi Shodhana is one, and that's the alternate nostril breath, and you want to do that for like maybe 20 minutes per day, and that's going to decrease the stress in the body, calm the nervous system, and basically, reduce pitta or level things out. The second is a breath called Shitali, and that's specifically a cooling breath. And so that's something that you could actually do during a hot flash. A hot flash or a hot flush?
Flush.
It's extremely cooling. And right. Yeah, so in the moment, you can use that. And again, I'll link something below so that you can see exactly what to do. But that's something that's kind of subtle, but super, super effective and efficient in the moment.
They are amazing, and I'm definitely going to be asking you about those if I ever have any of those symptoms. You have anything else?
Well,
Abhyanga.
Abhyanga, of course. We should all be doing that all the time anyway. But yeah, of course, for managing Vata overall, it's going to be super helpful using sesame oil as your dominant oil. It would be worth touching on. So yoni care, vaginal dryness, everyone talks about this as being a big and so the few things that you might not have thought of that are going to be incredible. And again, this is stuff we can all be doing all the time, but specifically in this perimenopause phase, it's going to be really, really helpful. So yoni steam, using herbs, specific herbs, kind of make like a tea and then sit over the hot water and let the steam rise up into the vaginal canal. Super helpful. Yoni massage, using again sesame oil, or you can even use ghee, which is like super, super nourishing. Maybe it sounds weird, but it's actually...
No. Yeah, that sounds good.
So, yeah, massaging with warm ghee or sesame, really, really nice. And then the consistent practice with the yoni egg. The yoni egg is going to bring more blood flow, more what we say in Ayurveda, like the ojas, juiciness to this part of the body, more energy to this part of the body. It's also going to help with like pelvic floor strength. So if incontinence is an issue, this is also a super amazing, amazing practice for all of us all the time, but especially if you're in this peri phase and you haven't got a yoni egg yet, get yourself one. And I have a special link actually that I'll leave in the show notes if you want to go ahead and purchase. I'll leave a link to the Yoni Pleasure Palace where you can use my code, and they have the steaming herbs there and all of the amazing eggs and wands and stuff. So, yeah, and I guess with insomnia, that's another big one. And, of course, with increased Vata, we have that link to our sleep being disrupted, or, you know, waking, not getting into a deep sleep, and then waking, you know, tossing and turning, getting into that anxious spiral in the wee hours of the morning. And so, again, broken record, but our sleep hygiene is going to be paramount. And I guess an Ayurvedic recommendation would be to do the moon milk. So that's just like warm, either dairy milk if you're into that, or, you know, some kind of plant-based milk with specific herbs. Again, I'll link below, but lavender, turmeric, and having that before bed is really helpful. And employing all of the sleep hygiene things that we've talked about ad nauseum. And again, we've got a whole episode on sleep. So if you're not sure about sleep hygiene, go back and listen to that episode.
Amazing. So let me add some practical health things. So the first thing is that, you know, in terms of diet, because most women in their perimenopausal years are actually depleted of nutrients, and those nutrient depletions will actually have sort of a deleterious effect on our adrenals, and those adrenals and thyroid are having an impact on the balance of our hormones and the interaction of those hormones. So we need to make sure that we're eating a nutrient-dense diet, and we also need to make sure that we are avoiding foods that would deplete those nutrients. So the biggest one is gluten. it is going to interfere with magnesium, zinc, iron, the fat-soluble vitamins, all of those really good nutrients that help with our adrenals, help with our thyroids, help with the balance of our hormones, help with our sleep, you know, help with our energy levels if we're having those heavy bleeds. So just eating those nutrient dense foods, which we do cover in the fertility episodes and are pertinent to this, I guess, to just say one, if you don't want to eat it, supplement it, beef, liver, because it has all of those things in abundance. So watching our gut health, making sure that we're not eating those nutrient depleting foods and making sure that we're eating those nutrients. And yeah, like I said, a lot of women have got postnatal depletion. So that's the first thing. And then the second thing is I've seen a lot of people talk about fasting. A lot of doctors, functional medicine practitioners, chiropractors that are like, you know, endocrine sort of specialists that talk about fasting. I 100,000,000% disagree. I mean, maybe there's some arguments you might say, Mandy, for someone that had like more of a kapha dosha predominantly to do a little bit, but generally speaking, and given that this time is that stress, high stress time, or like what Amanda likes to call that Vata time, we want to make sure that we're not activating that adrenal response even more by having periods of time, long periods of time, where we're not eating during the waking hours. So it's really, really key to balance our blood sugar, to keep our adrenals nice and calm as much as is possible, that we're eating regularly. So every three to four hours is a gold standard for balancing hormones. And that's really important during these perimenopausal times, is really to do that.
What I would just quickly say is that making sure that our digestive fire stays really nice and strong through the perimenopause phase is really important. And that's exactly what you're talking about with making sure that we're able to absorb and uptake all those nutrients. And having like coffee and alcohol is going to, yeah, basically eliminate our agni, our digestive fire, and, you know, gluten, sugar, all of the pretty basic things that we talk about all the time. And this is why we've been saying, you know, to manage our health overall is really going to help when we go into this peri phase, because yeah, they're the building blocks that's setting us up to have optimal digestion.
Yeah, I mean, just to bring it back to coffee and alcohol, I mean, which I was definitely going to allude to. Well, firstly, alcohol is like purely estrogenic. So like I've already said, we're swimming in a pool of estrogen already. Most of us have excess estrogen, and a lot of the symptoms are related to that. Alcohol is just going to add to that, and it's also going to make your gut more leaky and interfere with nutrient absorption. And then coffee is going to stimulate your already tired little adrenals, or, you know, overworked adrenals. And it's going to produce dopamine, which is, you know, why everybody loves it. But it's also going to produce cortisol, and that is going to lower your progesterone, potentially increase your estrogen, and again, you know, increase that stress load, which will make all of those symptoms flare. So totally. Like 1,000,000% coffee and alcohol, unfortunately, during, I mean, and again, I feel like we have said this in other episodes, and I'm sure we said this when we were talking in our period episode, that, you know, one of the best ways to have a really healthy cycle is to cut coffee and alcohol, and obviously sugar as well. Like anything that is, well, with sugar and coffee, anything that is stimulating is going to basically steal away from the body's production of those sex hormones and create imbalance.
And when it comes to fasting, just one little thing I would say is, if you are, I guess, wanting to entertain that, the only thing that I would suggest is a cleanse, or a khichdi fast, you could call it. And that's basically, yeah, just having khichdi 3 or 4 times a day for, you know, maybe 3 or 4 days. And that would be, I guess, the Ayurvedic version of fasting, because you're still giving your digestive system a break, but you're not going into that stress response of, oh, fuck, I've got no food, you know. You're still getting all the nutrients. You're still being super nourished. And again, we're interested in increasing kapha, increasing our juiciness, our ojas. And so, of course, if we're doing that, we don't want to cut out food. That's our first and foremost.
I think, like, obviously I've worked with hundreds and hundreds of women that are in perimenopause and some in menopause. And the ones that have had the worst symptoms are the ones that haven't eaten, like, that have, regularly, you know, just have done all of that stuff, like restricting calories, skipping meals, which, you know, now is sort of glorified and medicalized and, you know, accepted. If you just say, look, fasting. I'm going to fast now, then it's all okay. And, you know, apparently you're going to have mitochondrial, you know, acceleration and all of these other purported health benefits. But those people that have done that, you know, during their perimenopausal and maybe even just their premenopausal years, during their fertile years, they have the worst time because they have been in a sort of a chronic state of fight or flight and their body's, you know, not making adequate sex hormones. So, yeah, but the kitchen.
We haven't even spoken about sex.
Yeah, I know. Well, we've spoken about the lady parts. We just haven't really spoken about sex. Well, I don't know.
Low libido is a big complaint.
Yes. Yeah, well, that's because of those lowered hormones. Again, there are some philosophies that say that if you incorporate phytoestrogenic food, so I mean, I can't even believe I'm going to say this. I'm just saying that this is some schools of thoughts. I'm not saying that I believe this, but your nuts and seeds, some of those like flax seeds, soy, things like that, that those foods that are higher in phytoestrogens, that you can actually, I guess, increase that juiciness and increase that libido. But I think also that progesterone plays a really important role in that. And I think that, you know, managing stress overall is going to keep that balance, and know that, you know, your body will continue to make those hormones even postmenopausally. So it's just about how well you're nurturing, more than anything, how you're nurturing your adrenals and your thyroid.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's all of the same practices, but I think in terms of sex, you've covered like doing the yoni egg. And I think it's a good idea to, if you're not going to have regular sex, which I think is also a really good idea, to self pleasure on a regular basis as well, because the act of self pleasuring or having orgasms is also continuing to maintain lubrication and just flow of
keep the energy flowing.
Yeah, flow of chi into that area.
Get the glow.
And I mean, I know we've talked about this in other podcasts, like sometimes it's worth having sex, even if you don't feel like having sex, because it is, you know, particularly if you can have an orgasm, it is going to just help
reduce stress.
And keep the vagina active and alive.
Happy.
Yeah, exactly. The only other thing I wanted to say.
Can you tell us about HRT? What are your thoughts?
My thoughts are that they're all problematic. So HRT has fallen well and truly out of favor. So there's not many. They still, actually, doctors do still talk about it.
I'm sure they do.
Of course.
HRT, just to clarify, hormone replacement therapy.
And it's typically estrogen. So they're giving you synthetic estrogen for the most part. But there's been a lot of problems. Women have had a lot of problems with HRT.
Oh,
some
shock,
women
horror.
Have developed
imagine
breast
that.
Cancer. I know.
Yeah. I mean,
yeah.
Fuck.
I know. So, no, I definitely never recommend HRT. And then I'm also pretty reluctant and unsure about bioidentical hormones as well. I'm pretty sure that they're using like, for some of them, they're using like equine. Using hormones that they're taking from a horse, like a pregnant horse. I think that's what they use, like, for the progesterone, the bioidentical progesterone. Anyway, the key is your body can make these hormones. It doesn't have to, like, like testosterone, like your androgenic hormones can pick up the slack, your adrenals can pick up the slack. You don't need to be ovulating to have these hormones working. But it's about what are you doing to your body? How are you managing your stress load?
Yeah.
So it's all of the practices that we've talked about. And I suppose there's two more that you touched on one, but we all need to be managing our adrenal health and our stress load. And one way is yoga or meditation, because we just need to, relative to our output, spend some time inputting, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
Fill up your cup. And the other thing is, it is unfortunately a little bit more important to sort of reduce stress during this time. Like you said, your vata, you're super vulnerable. So putting some boundaries in, you might not be able to be superwoman like you were sort of in your early 30s, where you did literally do it all, like fill your weekends, fill your weeknights, also have kids, also have a bit less sleep. I mean, if you do all of that, you're probably going to suffer more with perimenopause, but you literally can't get away with that usually.
No, there's only so long that candle can be burnt at both ends.
No, so it is about like really taking a bird's eye view of your entire life and putting some firm boundaries in around, you know, what are you going to say no to, so that your body can actually function the way it needs to.
And so you can feel awesome. And so you can really go into that post-menopause phase feeling whole and complete and satisfied and really content.
Yeah, 100%. And feeling well.
Exactly. You know? And I will say there's loads, not that I really care about scientific studies, but there's loads of incredible research been done now about the benefits of yoga and osteoporosis for women, which of course, you know, bone density is a big issue as well going into those later years. So yeah, do I need to prove my point that yoga is worth doing? If you're not sure, there's plenty of science to back it up.
I love it. Okay, so I think we should slide into recommendations. I actually don't know what I'm going to recommend, so tell me what you're going to recommend, Mans, and I'll think on the fly of what I'm going to recommend.
My guru is Jane Hardwick Collins. No, but she has a special course which runs as like an in-person workshop in Australia and actually globally, you know, pre-pandemic. And I believe it's also coming online now, a course specifically for this perimenopausal / menopause / Marga phase. And it's called Autumn Woman Harvest Queen. And awesome. We will link that below. You told me that you were going to recommend.
I know.
Well, you don't want to anymore.
We've sort of pivoted a little bit because we are not talking so much about menopause. We're talking about peri. And so,
really helpful.
I'm going to recommend two people. And I'm going to give them a little bit of context and let you find the person and the information, because they both have quite a lot. So the first one is Dr. Sarah Gottfried, and she wrote a book called The Hormone Cure, but I'm pretty sure she's written quite a few others, and I'll just link to her. I don't agree with everything she says, because I think in some cases she likes fasting, but that book in particular is very helpful because she starts with lifestyle solutions. And most of those lifestyle solutions are the same sort of stuff that we talk about: cutting booze, cutting alcohol, managing stress, doing yoga, meditating. So I think I like her core philosophies, and she always starts there. And then she talks about sort of nutraceutical stuff. So like what nutrients are important for balancing different hormonal stuff. So she does as like a third or fourth option offer some bioidentical hormone stuff, and that's just not what I agree with. And I think she likes fasting, like I said, but I think generally speaking, she's really got the perimenopausal niche down. I like what she believes in. So Dr. Sarah Gottfried. And then the other one is, and I've recommended her before, is Dr. Christine Northrup. Now she is postmenopausal. She has a book about menopause.
If you want to see a expander of a beautiful, glowing postmenopausal woman, go and look at her Instagram.
Yes, totally. And she also has a book which we have both recommended at different times called Women's Bodies, Women's Wisdom. And that also has
She also has one specifically about the peri and menopause phase called The Goddess Doesn't Age.
Oh yeah, that's true. I forgot about that one. And then The Wisdom of Menopause as well.
Yeah. So I feel like she was kind of a pioneer and like definitely really paved the way for reframing menopause for women and revealing its gifts and its power. So
yeah.
The way that we talk about menopause now is actually kind of informed by what she laid down quite a while ago.
Totally. And, yeah, I mean, she taught me everything that I sort of learned and understood about hormones in my early 20s, and probably was part of the reason that I became so passionate about well-being. So She's amazing. And I think unless you've got something else to add, that might be a wrap.
That is it.
Thank you so much, as always, for listening to the Elevate podcast. And don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review so we can keep bringing these conversations to you all.